Welcome to another edition of Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk. Today's book came to mind similarly when back in like 2001 after 9/11 and the War of Terror, I call it the War of Terror, began officially with extreme anti-Islamic rhetoric. I was reminded of the Sufi tradition when learning little bits about the religions of Sunni and the Shiites and the Muslims and all that, but there was scant, if any, mention of the Sufi tradition, of which I don't know a lot. I know the poet and mystic Rumi came out of that, so that speaks volumes. And similarly now, with what's going on with Russia and Ukraine, and that's most of the mainstream news nowadays, I like to look beyond that to the earth and the spiritual traditions and indigenous ways, and that some of that comes out of this book. And this looks like, as I was looking through the book to get some good quotes, it seems like at least two parts to this series. This was published in 2009, written by Cherry Gilchrist, called Russian Magic, Living Folk Traditions of an Enchanted Landscape. And after the introduction, amazingly, it's quite the segue from last week's episode with talking about the Native medicine men and the power of the stones. So here is chapter one, The Russian Magical World That Begins the White Stone. This stone has been the center of the universe for the people who live here, Leonid explained. A cultural axis, a place where children are blessed with names to protect them and illnesses are healed. The burly archaeologist pointed to the standing stone set in the middle of a southern Siberian plain, a solitary mountain rising behind it. It is called the White Stone. We know for sure that it has been used for over 2,000 years, but is much older than that. We have watched what the local people do when they visit it to make a wish. And now, if you like, you may do the same. You must walk around it three times in a circle. As you begin, you are still in this world, but when you go around, you will be led into another world. Be ready to give something as an offering. A coin or cigarette will do. Then hold the stone for about 20 seconds. Women standing on the south side, men on the north. No longer, or the energy will be too strong, and it could harm you. And you must go sunwise. Caucasians, K-H-A-K-A-S-S-I-A-N, Caucasians do everything this way, even when they dig their gardens. Leonid was the chief archaeologist of the Caucasian region, and his life's work was centered on their culture, linking ancient sites with contemporary belief. And he goes on to talk about further multidimensional stuff that was also a feature of the Vine Deloria book about the medicine men. Leonid's response to my question was typical of what I have found in Russia many times over, an open-mindedness in regard to the effectiveness of ancient rituals, to a landscape empowered with unusual forces, and to a world of spirits which may interact with our own. Russian scientists may seek out a scientific explanation, as indeed they are trained to do, but they do not necessarily close the door to the view that our universe has other dimensions and energies which we are able to explore in non-scientific ways, too. Our encounter with the White Stone was also an indication of a yearning in the Russian soul to return to the roots of native myth and tradition, as we witnessed our Russian co-travelers eagerly connecting to the power of the Siberian landscape and its megaliths. These survivals of a magical worldview, along with the current practices of shamanism in Siberia, are similar to the kind of culture that prevailed in central and northern Russia in earlier times, as far as archaeologists and ethnographers can tell. So then, this also is fits with some of my personal path and personal DNA, because along with obviously a fascination and respect and interest in the native ways, native peoples of Turtle Island, oftentimes I've heard natives say to the effect, you know, why are you so fascinated with us? Go and find, why don't you study your own indigenous, find your own indigenous roots? So this, personally for me, is a book that connects exactly to that because of my Russian, Belarus, Ukrainian, and other DNA and ancestry, that this, when I got this book and it touched into the, especially the Siberian shamanic tradition, that just, that excited me so much to find out that, okay, I've got this in me. So then some of the historical perspective of that is there is no clear indication as to when Slavic people arrived in the area that we now call Russia. But the first Russian nation known as Rus, R-U-S, existed by the 9th century AD. As mentioned above, by the 10th century, it was well established and was centered on the city of Kiev, or I've heard it pronounced Kiev. So this goes back to when the peoples, I think, I don't know all the history, but this goes back to when the borders were not the same. This is like in 1947-48 was a major historical point when a man-made border created a rift in with Palestine and Israel, that what is today. Before that time, the traditions of all different religions were all getting along peacefully. And since 1948, when the Israeli, when Israel as a country was forced into the region, there's been war and trouble. Similarly, with Pakistan, with India and the Punjab region, that was also connected. And then a border was put up. So there now, there are, I had to ask Punjabi friends, there are Punjabis in Pakistan who are very different from the Punjabis in India because of, I presume, because of the border that was put up. So there are these man-made demarcations that have messed things up in our consciousness and that account for much of the wars and the troubles that are going on nowadays. So a little bit further here, then it says, as mentioned above, by the 10th century, it was well established and was centered on the city of Kyiv. Christianity came to Russia in about 988. Now, I find this fascinating because as I'm reading about what's going on nowadays, obviously Russia is heavily Orthodox Christianity, and that's sort of, you know, that's just part of the story. But nary or never is there a mention I have seen yet in reading about what's going on to mention of shaman or folklore tradition, which this book highlights. The further goes on to say, Vladimir, the ruler of the time, decided that it was time that his kingdom had a new faith and sent out his emissaries to inspect each of the great religions of the day. Legend has it that they were very impressed with Islam, but when Vladimir heard that alcohol was forbidden to Muslims, he shook his head sorrowfully and said it would never do for Russia. In Byzantium, his ambassadors were overwhelmed by the glory of the Orthodox rite there, reporting that on earth there is no such splendor or such beauty, and so Orthodox Christianity was adopted as the new state religion for Russia. So this also gets into the aspect of how these faiths, how these two faiths or traditions, the Orthodox Christianity and then the, whatever you call it, the shamanic, Siberian shamanism, the indigenous people, the native traditions, I don't know exactly what to call it, but it gets into a dance that continues. There's even mention of a Russian word that translates as mother damp earth or damp mother earth. And that gets into fertility and the goddess. And I guess the association with mother, the phrase mother Russia, rather comparatively to German, the fatherland. So that's interesting there. And so here, yeah, this is a good example of the where the two, as happens, I mean, that's happened to native peoples in, with Turtle Island, the Christianity that came over here and was forced upon them, that many people have lost touch with their the true traditional way, or some are, sometimes it's a mix. They're flavored with the Christianity, and sometimes some maintain the tradition. So here's the part in this book. In a happier vein, respect for the earth was shown when finding and picking plants, and she would be thanked for her bounty. Herb gatherers especially were recommended to bow to the earth 6 times at home before setting out, then 6 times over the place where the herbs were found growing. Herbs have long been an essential part of folk medicine, and luck would be needed in seeking them and gratitude when picking them. A householder's herbal advised that the following prayer should be recited 3 times when culling herbs for healing. Lord bless me, and you, Mother Fresh Earth, that's all in caps with the M, the first letter capped, Mother Fresh Earth. And you, Mother Fresh Earth, bless me to cull this plant. You have brought it forth for man's use, and thus I take you from the earth, a plant, from God, a medicine. Amen. Here, once again, there's a Russian word that means of or two faiths can clearly be seen at work in the duality of the earth mother and the Christian God. Respect and acknowledgement is given to each, and both are called upon gracefully and gratefully without any apparent conflict or belief. And that was one of the first things I noticed when I read this book, or one of the things that stood out to me is the acceptance. I don't know what's going on nowadays, and I don't know the history that much at all. But what I noticed from this book was the acceptance. Even though obviously the Orthodox Christianity is now the main thing, that it seems that there's an acceptance somewhere of the ancient traditions and shamanic traditions. For here in this book, she says, respect and acknowledgement given to each, and both are called upon gracefully and gratefully without any apparent conflict of belief. Maybe I would think there are some conflicts the way the world is, but I found that very contrasting to the Christianity that spread around the world, other parts of the world, and that came to the culling of the witches and the abhorrence of the church for the earth, the teachings and the plant medicines and all that coming from the earth, as well to what happened with native peoples with Turtle Island. So I don't know the history exactly, but there seems to be at least a tolerance, more of a tolerance of this ancient tradition and ways. And later on in the book, it gets also into the native or forest spirit, native spirit or forest spirit. Another amazing similarity with the origin story or creation story or creation myth, however you call it, that a parallel with the native people's Turtle Island from the Haudenosaunee. So amazingly, or not so amazingly, there are some similarities here, which I think, from what I know of indigenous peoples around the world, that while there are many differences, there's a unifying connection, because there's one Mother Earth. So it makes sense that there'd be a unified connection, but, you know, depending on your region, different birds, different plants, different trees, whatever. So that's a good place to stop now for part one, but at least a part two, because there's so much good stuff in this book. And I find it a way, this is a way, whatever narrative you believe in the news, whoever you think is right or wrong, that there is a way, a peaceful way, that encompasses the original teachings of both of the peoples, rather than getting into the political discussion. I think the political discussion needs to be addressed, because, say, for example, trying to deal with Nazis, is one aspect, but beyond that, or along with that, I think I have to be realistic and say along with that is finding the nourishment from the ancient traditions and the roots. So thank you for listening, and be well.